Hey, guys. Oh, big gulps, huh? All right. Well, see you later.
And welcome back to the Comedy Food Sports Podcast. We have a very special guest on the line.
Let me introduce literally my favorite comedian alive right now, Bill Burr. How are you, Bill?
Hey, what's going on?
The one and only Rich Eisen.
Sports is a lot safer than Christian Mingle.
Well, I wouldn't know about that. I'm a Jew.
Without further ado, the one and only best-selling author, popular radio show host, Jim Norton.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. What a rookie I am. You're listing things, I just interrupt.
You know, from The Man Show and Loveline, the godfather of podcasts himself, Adam Carolla.
Thanks for having me.
Very, very special guest. Used to be from Opie and Anthony, now from the Anthony Cumia Show. Anthony Cumia.
Look at that, what an intro. Jesus.
Smooth as silk.
Like, I thought I'd be on hold for the next segment while you talk to this wonderful person.
I was checking the specs on the end line for the rotary girder. I'm retarded.
Welcome, everybody, to this Comedy Food Sports Podcast on 1360 AM, on iTunes, on SB Nation Radio, on Stitcher, etc. Episode 97. This is our first one on 1360 AM, so we want to welcome all our South Jersey folk and all our Delaware folk and all our Philadelphia folk. Jay is with me. He's our producer and co-host, and Shelton is here as well.
Howdy.
He is our producer and co-host. Can you use the term producer? I don't really know if that counts. And I am Patrick, and I am our host, and that's about it. That's my only purpose here, is to kind of randomly introduce people that we call and do. For anybody listening to us for the first time, we welcome you guys. Go to comedyfoodsports.com if you want to learn more about what we've been doing for the past few years. I've had some great guests on here, like Adam Carolla and Rich Eisen and Bill Burr, and everybody watch, because your toes are getting dropped with all the names here. it's the only way we get people on. We brag about who we've had on in the past.
So. That's true.
Wow. So we got a really cool show for you guys to kick things off. Again, we've had about 96 episodes before this. Again, Carolla, Eisen, Anthony Cumia, Jim Norton, whole bunch of cool guests, and we expect it to keep going. Tonight we have Chip Chandry from Philadelphia, very funny comedian with Philly's Funniest Contest. He's now a writer on a bunch of different comedy shows, really, really taken off, and he was a regular for us for probably 8 episodes now, so yeah. Awesome guy, and contributed to the show. And we also have John Ziegler, and I am going to kind of leave things up to him on what he's about, but he is an awesome guest that gives us gold. And to make sure we say it now, there is going to be an additional, I don't even know, probably 30 minutes, give or take, 25 minutes of content that's going to be right on our website. We couldn't fill it all in this hour. So he's got some pretty interesting takes on kind of the Paterno-Sandusky whole melee. So I think it'll be really interesting, and keep an open mind and see what happens.
Yeah, it was
so
amazing. We got about an hour of it, so we're going to split it up over the next 3 weeks and do 3 installments, I think.
Yeah, we're going to do like 20 to 30 minute installments over the next few weeks, but also have the full recording up on the website in case you can't wait. So again, thank you, SB Nation Radio. Thank you, 1360, for putting us on. We're excited to be here. We're going to be here every week, every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard. We're also on iTunes. We're also on Stitcher, comedyfoodsports.com, at CFSPod on Twitter. And I think that's all our plugs. We'll do something on Instagram eventually. I think we're at Comedy Food Sports on Instagram, but we haven't done anything there. So, yeah, good times.
It's typical.
So, again, up next, we have the awesome, funny, hilarious, super nice guy, which is the craziest part. He's a comedian and nice, which is an odd combination. But Chip Chandry from Philadelphia, very funny guy.
He used to be a teacher. I think that kind of contributes to the nice nature.
Yeah, I could see that.
He's just very patient with us. I think that's what it is. It's just with us. He knows he has to kind of slow down.
Right. He's like, you guys will get it together. Don't worry.
One day.
Right. One day it'll all make sense. So again, thanks for listening in. Up next is going to be Chip. Check him out at Chip Chandry on Twitter and Instagram and everything else imaginable. CHIPCHANTRY. Super funny guy. Amazing Twitter follow. He's got the best quick takes of anybody, I think, out there, in my opinion.
Definitely.
As far as news happens, and he says something very quickly and very funny. So check him out, and we will see you guys in a couple of minutes. After that, we're going to go straight into John Ziegler's interview. Really intense stuff, but really really cool in its own weird way. It's a very unique kind of take on everything, and I think it's really gonna raise some eyebrows and you know, really kind of make people question the media at all times, which you always did anyway.
Well, so. I thought it was great because I didn't know much about the trial to begin with, like the whole thing. So I was coming into it completely clean with him being my main source of information. So yeah, I'm down with what he's saying. You know, people get railroaded all the time. Like, why not this guy? It, you know, I didn't pay attention to what was going on at the time. And I feel like if it had happened, if everything had come out now that everybody's so distrustful about the criminal justice system, like maybe it would have been looked at a little bit more differently. When we have him on for another 2 hours, I'll make sure to ask him that.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, he is going to have another column with us shortly after we release these few episodes.
He didn't even start. It's amazing.
Yeah, he didn't even get close to starting. Like, he interviewed the guy like 3 times in jail, interviewed his wife. I mean, there's so much to that that we didn't even get to. Franco Harris, the list goes on. So anyway, we appreciate you guys listening. Chip Chandry's up next. John Ziegler's on the other side. And then we will talk to you guys in like 40 minutes, give or take, to close things out. And I say good day. Welcome back to Comedy Food Sports, episode 97. We're getting close to 100. We should probably plan that out.
Well, something, yeah.
Something.
I don't know.
Maybe we could get Chip on again. I think he'd come back 3 episodes later.
Anyway, I'll totally do it.
We have a special guest on the line. He's our first guest of the night. Very funny comedian. He's been on the podcast a ton. He's like a borderline contributor. He's like, just picture Shane Gillis, but like funny. just kidding. He's also Philly's funniest winner. Really funny guy. Super nice guy, which is rare in the comedy world, it feels like. And he's doing a show on the 27th with the Found Footage Festival. And on the 29th with Jeff Tate. He's going to tell us where those are because I think one's at Good, and I'm not sure where the other one is. So without further ado, the one and only Chip Chantry.
I'm here. I'm on the line. I love it. I love being here. I'm in my bedroom right now speaking to you gentlemen. It's great.
We need that really like shitty like birthday. I forgot. I can't swear. We need that really poopy no honk noise, you know, that the birthday.
There it is. But both of those shows, by the way, are at the new Good Comedy Theater in Philadelphia. So in the Chinatown area, I believe on 11th Street, but it's brand new comedy theater. Both those shows will be there. So that'll be
very
fun.
Cool.
Yeah, that's not as fun as this show, because this is where it's at right here.
Oh, well, that goes without saying. The Found Footage Festival, what's their story, by the way, because I've seen their name pop up a bunch lately.
They're hysterical. So I wrote on a TV show with them last year. We were both on a separate TV show, and they have something called the Found Footage Festival. It's two guys named Joe and Nick. They're hilarious. They basically what they do is they find old VHS tapes from the 80s and 90s, and it's ridiculous. It's like exercise videos, footage of public access shows, instructional videos that are just crazy, and they're hysterical. So, and they basically kind of do a sort of a mystery science theater thing to them, where they show segments. They'll show like a 5-minute segment of this, you know, crazy exercise video from the 80s, and they will and you know, they make comments on it, and they do sketches that, you know, that play off of that, and it's a fun show. So
it's
kind of
like in real time, so to speak.
Right. Yeah. So like they're up on stage, that, you know, they show the footage and they'll sort of talk over it like Mystery Science Theater. And then they'll kind of do something related to that video afterward. You know, they'll either do a sketch or they'll have a bit that goes along with it. And it's great. It's a lot of fun. So I'll be doing some stand up and they'll be doing they're actually debuting some new videos. So it should be fun.
Awesome. It sounds like a really fun show. And then you're just opening up for Jeff Tate. Is that just like a normal?
Yeah, it's Jeff Tate and Emma Arnold, who are both very funny, and so I'll be opening up for those guys. And they're I worked with them at Helium last year, and I've known Jeff for years. I've worked with Jeff a bunch, and he and Emma came to Helium last year, and I opened for them. So I'm doing it again at Good. So it should be a ton of fun.
Awesome. Jeff's like randomly a legend in his own like weird way.
He really is. Yes. He's
just one of those guys who's like he's all of a sudden on like WTF with Marc Maron out of the blue, and you're like, wait, isn't that guy's not He's not like, it's like the week after Billy Crystal's on too.
Right. And it's, and he's just, he's there. He's like everywhere. He's and he marches to the beat of his own drummer. He does his own thing. He, let's just say he's been through the desert on a horse with no name.
he's with his own drummer too.
Exactly. Oh yeah. Yeah. Just a nameless horse between him and the drummer. They can't come up, but they just keep arguing about the name for the horse. That's what it is. And they've narrowed it down to like 10 names, but they just can't, you know, it's like, I want to name her after my grandfather. It's like, no, I want to name it Trump. One of them's a real big Trump supporter. I'm not going to say one.
Jeff's like, we're not going to name it Stuart Copeland. All right. Enough. That's the drummer I always pull, by the way. No matter what the scenario is, it's always Stuart Copeland.
It's a good reach.
Joke to be made.
I believe Stuart Copeland, also a little fact, and I could be wrong about this. Internet people can look it up on their Googles, but I believe the police were going to get back together in like 1985 or 86 to do like a, I don't know if they were going to tour, but they were going to do like they were going to kind of like rehash a few songs, like re-record some songs or maybe even record some new songs. And I believe Stuart Copeland was thrown from a horse or like fell off a horse and he broke his leg or he broke his arm, so he couldn't play the drums. I think that's so they never did. So they did this really, and I'm a huge Police fan, love the Police. And they ended up doing – there is a track out there called Don't Stand So Close to Me 86, I think it's called. Like the year is either – Don't Stand So Close to Me 85 or 86. And they redo the song, but it's basically with drum machine. And it's really slow and it's it's awful. I really hate that.
It's like, it sounds, I never knew why they did that. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Yeah.
Even the description sounds terrible.
And I'm a huge – I love the Police. Like one of my favorite bands. And yeah, that song just doesn't do it for me. And it's all because I believe Stuart Copeland fell off a horse.
Young teacher. It's very slow like that, right? And got kind of like deep and sultry.
Yes.
Yeah, that's exactly
little,
it.
Yeah, it gets a little new wavy in there. And it's not a fun – I wonder what the horse's name was that threw him off. I'm sure that horse had a name.
Yeah,
I'm guessing he went with son of a. Oh, we can't say that, can we?
Oh, that's right, because we're on the radio now.
Well, unfortunately, we're pre-recording, so we can put Jay through the ringer in the editing bay.
Yeah.
In June of 1986, the trio reconvened to play three concerts for the Amnesty International of Conspiracy of Hope tour. That's a zilch of a name right out of the gate. In July of that year, they reunited in studio to record a new album. However, Copeland broke his collarbone in a fall from a horse and was unable to play the drums. The horse's name was...
Christopher Reeve.
Bing. You got it. I'm impressed.
Was it really?
No.
I was going to say, it'd be awesome. Care about the
horse? Even Wikipedia doesn't care about that.
If it's a white band, you can tell me anything, I'll believe it. I'll be better.
So Chip, tell us about what's been going. Tell us about the show you wrote for, by the way, because I don't think we've actually talked to you since then.
I know,
Jay,
it's been a while.
Like, quit and joined, rejoined like 7 times since then.
Yeah, well, just like Stuart Copeland did. Stay off of horses, Jay. Stay off.
I know, I'm a fan of horseplay.
Nothing but trouble. your collarbones are both wonderful. I've always admired your collarbones. I don't want anything to happen.
Collarbone strong for sure.
He has a point.
Those brittle little collarbones of yours. So with two collarbones, right? There's two. There's one on each. Two. So the TV show. So last year I got hired to write for a TV show called Crazy Talk on NBC for NBC Universal. It was a syndicated show, and it was basically a sort of a talk soup type of show where we showed clips of reality shows, talk shows, you know, like Jerry Springer, that type of thing, and then we made fun of it. So there were two hosts. They showed clips and then joke, and I wrote the jokes. There's 5 of us who wrote the jokes, and 2 of which were the found footage guys, and another one was actually the guy who actually got me on was do you guys know John McKeever? Have you had John on the show? Very funny.
I have. Very
yes.
Small hands, John.
Yes. Yes.
John has been on by himself, and then we had all 3 Delco guys.
The Delco guys. Yeah.
And Tim had the line of probably of all time,
which is.
And you don't even need a reference to it. He just goes, and the rest, as they say, is fingering.
Yeah, that's it. You could have just out of the blue just said, who do you think said this quote? I don't think. So last summer, John was on the show. They had just started the show. They were about a month in. They realized they wanted they wanted to add a writer. So John very graciously was like, "Oh, I know a guy," and that guy was me. They brought me up, and so I wrote for that show from August of last year until February of this year. And In those roughly 7 months or so, whatever it was, 6-7 months, we did 130 episodes. It was breakneck speed. We did six episodes a week. So between there was usually four of us, four writers in the office, and between the four of us, we had to write six episodes a week. But it was great. It's so much fun. But it was up. So we did it in the best and worst part of that was that we wrote and filmed it in Stamford, Connecticut. Beautiful. Stamford, Connecticut, in the same studio where Jerry Springer and Maury Povich shot there. So like, when you see, if you watch Maury or Jerry Springer, that's the same studio. That's the same room. They just changed the set around. And our show was in the same set, too. So so we did that. And then, so we did that. The show got, we went one season. We did 130 episodes. That got canceled. So I was just kind of back in Philly then from February on. And then I just got picked up over the summer to write from the same producers of this show, to write for a show called Whacked Out Sports, which has been on for about 10 years, but they just decided to sort of revamp it. And we did a couple episodes of Whacked Out Sports, which is basically sort of a sports bloopers show. And it's a lot of fun. You know, clip show, again, I just write jokes. And it's based in L.A., but they let me write from home, which is great. So I sit, once again, in my bedroom at home and just write jokes all day. that went for a while. We're on hiatus, but I think they're bringing it back. And then I'm also writing for a web series right now. So it's been pretty busy. It's been it's been a lot of fun. So I quit my teaching job. The last time I was on, I was still a teacher. Yeah. And I couldn't curse or do anything. And now I can curse and be as dirty as I want. Except now we're on radio, so I can't do that. Or I could just curse. I could just cause.
You can refer to somebody as a dick, but you can't refer to their piece as
that.
Yep.
Or I could just do that because old Collarbone Jay tons of extra work. But I don't want to do that.
You might break his collarbones with that.
I know. It's too much.
Is like, that what Tony Romo always hurts, by the way? Much.
And I popped it out.
Yes. Exactly. Too many bleeps.
I just Romo'd my clavicle.
You know what I was waiting for the whole time when you were telling the story about the About the clip show? I was just waiting for who was going to chime in first with the awkward. Did they all air?
Oh yes, yeah.
Clearly, none of us watched it enough to be like, oh yeah, totally. I remember that guy hosted him.
Well, you know what? Here's the interesting part. You guys said that you guys none of you really watched it. No one actually watched it, so that's why they're not making anymore. So that it kind of works out for everybody. They're like, well, nobody's watching it, so I guess we'll just not do it anymore. Because basically that's usually what happens is that when zero people watch it, they just stop giving you money to make it for whatever reason. I don't see the logic in it.
I feel like you could fudge the numbers a little easier nowadays. Like, you could be like, well, you know, there's digital downloads and Hulu and whatnot. You know?
I know, right? There's so many variables, but I don't think that was going to do it. So I'm hoping for the new show, for the Whacked Out Sports show, which is really funny. It's a lot of fun. That it does. From what I heard, I think the numbers were actually doing pretty well. So we just did a couple episodes, and they're kind of waiting around to see what the next step is. So I'm hoping that it takes off again.
See, there's awesome. So many shows now. Like, what are good numbers? Like, what do people expect? Like something
20,
like that to
30
draw?
People.
I don't know. Like, I don't know the numbers. I'm terrible for the at the business end of it. But but I think it literally. It's like. I think for like the one show, like if for a real low budget show, it's because everything's so spread. When it was just 3, 6, and 10, you needed like a, you know, 20%, 30%, you know, draw or whatever, because you know that's what people are watching. Nowadays, it's literally like 1% or 2%, and you can do all right just because everybody's watching online. There's 100 different channels, so it's just it's so spread out that if you're pulling like a 1.0 or a 2.0. If you're a low budget show, you can actually slide by for a while.
Yeah, like this is more like the higher budget shows. But I heard an interview with the guy from Black-ish, the guy who created it, because he used to be a stand up. If you had to guess, what do you think the normal audience would be for a girls episode versus a Black-ish episode? Just ballpark guess. Everybody's playing, by the way. There's a prize I'm drinking a gin and apple cider. You guys get to finish
I would say that Blackish would get a lot more. We'll get a lot more viewers, right? Because that's on a network.
Yeah,
right?
That's what I would think too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is it like a couple million? No.
So a good night for girls is maybe 700,000 people. And a good night for Blackish is like 2.3 million.
Is that that's right?
Crazy. Well, check it. I just found a good example. So how many people do you think watched the last episode of Louie?
12.
You're doing the Price is Right rules. 500,000.
Yeah. One. Yeah. I'm going to go with the dollar.
And that's huge for FX, by the way.
I know. Wow. Yeah, there was one episode that was 370,000 people. That's what I'm saying. I mean, what kind of numbers do you have to do? It's weird. Like, there's like so many shows. That was the biggest show when it was on. I mean, like, if you read anything online, right? But right. 500,000 people watched it. Weird.
The problem is, the downloads. They have to count the downloads, I guess, in the long run.
Exactly. Or DVR. I haven't seen I'm a huge Louis fan, but I don't like, we don't even have cable right now at our house. Like we have Netflix basically. Right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, and Amazon. So I haven't seen Louis. So my number isn't including that, but in another 6 months when it's on Netflix or when it's on whatever, I'm going to be watching it. So, yeah. So they obviously have to account for that, but I guess it's gotta be so much more difficult because, you know, back in the day, it was like, all right, what were last night's numbers? And you just saw it, and it was right there. And that was pretty much the beginning and end of it. Like, whereas Louis might have, you know, 500,000, but there's probably going to be another million or so, I would assume, that are going to watch it over and over again, possibly on Netflix or on Hulu or on demand, whatever it's going to be.
Yeah, I just bought it on Amazon.
Burr was talking about, you know, his show on Netflix, and they're like, they just like gave him a second season because they're just like, we don't know, but we like it and it's funny, so we have no idea.
We're going to go with the Big Bang Theory concept, and that all the old people fall asleep at 7 o'clock and leave their TVs on.
They just keep it on.
We had 23 million viewers last week. No, they're all dead.
They woke up with Asperger's.
Yeah, half the people are dead now. We're just going to leave it alone.
I just wrote a Big Bang Theory joke in my web series that I'm writing today.
Please tell me it makes fun of it.
I just, you know, it's
it's a very some people, pro. Like,
there are people like my parents love it. There's so many people. It's the what's his name, like Chuck Lorre, I guess. Like, you know, 2.5 Men, the same thing. People loved that show, and I just there weren't any jokes in it. Like there's no punchlines. There's just. You know, here's an obvious situation. Here's the quickest, easiest joke that we could think of. And here it is. But you know what? I'm not faulting them because they're making millions and millions of dollars. And I am not. So that's the sad part.
You do the laugh track over and they're like, oh, I guess we laugh at this. And
here's the part where they laugh. Yeah.
Dance, clown, dance.
Exactly what it is. Speaking of clowns, have you guys seen any clowns out and about in your nightly shows?
No, but that's another Penn State topic. Did you see that big pep talk the guy at Penn State gave before they went to the woods trying to chase clowns? Yeah, it went viral today. Some like guy gave him a big like Braveheart speech about how they were going to go to the woods and chase down the clowns.
You know?
Only they were that diligent with Sandusky, huh?
Exactly, right? All right, like I can just see, like, in just it's not too far. It's 6 months in the future. This or the post apocalypse, just you know, hopefully not after the election in November. But it post apocalypse, like just fenced in acreage of areas where you just hear like over a bullhorn or like a loudspeaker. It's like, send in the clowns, and then just there's just snipers everywhere. I feel really bad for is like people who are like birthday clowns for like kids' parties and they have to like drive to a kid's house. First of all, you know their sales numbers are going way down, right?
Yeah.
Nobody's going to hire clowns. But then even if you do, like let's say I'm a clown for a kid's birthday party, I got to get all dolled up and then get in my Honda Civic and drive across town to go to like little Tyler's birthday party. Like I'm going to be shot. On the way there, like
and
just
then it
getting
breaks
out
down.
Of, yeah, the car breaks down. And I'm trying to ride
a tow truck to get there.
I'm trying to wave to people, and like they're not. And like I have like you know how like people put like that like a white T-shirt in the window. Like it's just like it's a big handkerchief of different colors that just keeps pulling out.
Exactly,
it's a massive.
Nobody wants to pull over and pick them up because they know it's 70 other ones are going to come out of the car.
Yeah, it's like, I don't have all these clowns.
And there's room for them.
And they're all going to murder me. I think a clown did just get shot in the head. Is that not true?
I believe so, yeah.
Like last day or so. So
yeah, one can only help. I mean, it might have happened. I don't know.
Yeah.
It wasn't me.
awesome. I almost put a joke about that, by the way.
We're going to be calling our boy soon here. So yeah. Let's get your plugs in, Chip. So what are you at? Yeah. At?
So just at Chip Chantry everywhere, at Chip Chantry at Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. I also have my dog has an Instagram account now. It's concerned_Stanley because he's a little shih tzu and he just looks concerned about everything. So we just take pictures of him and we try to figure out what he's concerned about. So you can check that out. And ChipChantry.com. And I'll be on the shows in the end of October, which I'm really looking forward to. A good comedy.
Awesome, man. Well, we always love you calling in. And
yes, absolutely. Anytime. Let me know. Definitely want to call back. I think between the four of us, we can get to the bottom of the Jerry Sandusky and the clown epidemic.
This crossover possibility.
It is. Yeah. It's all in Happy Valley, you know? Something's going on there.
Yeah. You know who's making out like a bandit right now? The people who are selling those T-Rex costumes, because that's what I'm going as instead of a clown. I'm not doing a clown.
Yeah, nobody's going to go as a clown for Christmas. But even Halloween, I don't think it's going to be a big clowning year for that.
No, I wouldn't do it.
Yeah, I feel like whoever shows up at my front door is getting a baseball bat, even if they're like a kid.
Look, I wonder if the mime community is getting a little boost, you know, like they're not as shitty anymore. It's like, maybe it's mimes that are actually trying to give clowns a bad name. So they're getting a little more stage time. I know we got to go, but I'm throwing
Chip,
that theory out there.
Chip, would you say they're undermining them?
Oh no, that was worse than what I was going to say.
I would totally say they're undermining them, but
they trying to fill their shoes.
Well, they're
clown shoe joke. Come on.
I don't want to put a mimes in a box though. Hey, it's a box. They put themselves in boxes.
They get stuck pretty easily, and then they have to like use some like pole that they pull themselves out with. I never understood that one.
It's a rope, and
you don't think that the mimes are going to get confused for clowns and get assaulted themselves? I think they might get wrapped up in the whole thing. Like
they're good at their job though. They'll be people will know. You know, they're stuck in a box or climbing a ladder or something.
If you're shot as a mime, do you scream help?
I think what you do is you just rub your eyes really fast like you're crying.
it's the stress.
Yeah.
Look at him. He's still in character. So devoted.
All right. We have to call Mr. John Ziegler.
I cannot wait to listen to the rest of this show, so I can't wait till it's on the radio, and I'm going to listen. So keep me posted, and Godspeed. It's going to be a fun one for you guys.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah.
So much fun.
All right, gentlemen. Well, thanks for having me on.
I'll
see you.
Gentle lace and a pretty face, ponytail hanging down, a wiggle and a walk.
Welcome back to episode 97 of the Comedy Food Sports Podcast, live on the radio for the first time as well. We're excited about our next guest, decorated author and former sports broadcaster, and he's covering a very controversial subject, which is very kind of near and dear to the hearts of people in the Philadelphia area and just Pennsylvania in general. His name's John Ziegler, and he's done a lot of background on kind of the Sandusky case, from Paterno to Sandusky and so on. We want to really kind of give him some time, and we'll have an open mind and listen to what he has to say, because I think it's pretty awesome. So without further ado, John Ziegler's on the line. How are you, John?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, and for your audience, it might be interesting for them to know that I actually grew up in the Philadelphia area. I live in Los Angeles now, but I grew up in Bucks County, although I have no connection to Penn State, and I actually used to work at WIP Radio, among other radio stations in Philadelphia, I was a sports host there. So I have fond memories of Philadelphia.
No, that's great. We actually, every once in a while, we'll cover the Wing Bowl. We get a media pass, and that's sponsored by WIP. So.
Right. Now, not my favorite event, and I'm not a big fan of the guys at WIP. As a matter of fact, the guys at WIP are are a significant part of the reason why the news media completely butchered this Penn State Joe Paterno and Kerry Sandusky story. They're a bunch of morons. They have no idea. And I know this because I worked with them. They're all idiots. and yet they're pretending to understand this case, and they don't know the first thing about it. I do, because I've spent the last 4 years of my life studying it like no one else has.
Yeah, well, let's dive right into it. So I would like, just to kind of kick things off, I would like for you to just kind of bring us to the beginning of A, what brought you down this path, and then B, kind of let's start kind of from the early on pieces that really kind of opened up your eyes and brought you kind of.
Well, here's how I got involved in the story. As I said, you're probably wondering, okay, you have no connection to Penn State, you live in the Los Angeles area, what the heck are you doing involved with this? Well, of the many things that I've done in a very mediocre fashion in my career, one of them is I'm a documentary filmmaker who specializes in stories where the media really blew it. As a matter of fact, I've been on the Today Show a couple of times with Matt Lauer to introduce films, including one about the 2008 election called Media Malpractice. I'm a political conservative, and I'm a big critic of the news media in general, not just for things like liberal bias, but frankly for just flat-out incompetence. And as I was watching the story unfold in November of 2011, I was very skeptical of what I was hearing. I was like, this story doesn't make any sense. And I also understood the way the news media works or doesn't work, that they were uniquely positioned to blow this story because for a number of reasons, one of which was that the narrative was fitting what they wanted way too much for them to be able to resist the temptation to rush to judgment, and also because people forget, among many things they forget in this case, this broke during the slowest week in football season, and it was particularly slow that particular year because the NBA was on strike. This was the very beginning of November, and, you know, no one cares about hockey at that point. Football's in a lull. And baseball has ended. The World Series is over. So ESPN really needed content. And I think that this story really all begins because ESPN is scheduled to broadcast the Penn State-Nebraska game the Saturday after Jerry Sandusky's arrest, the week after Joe Paterno is the all-time win leader in the history of college football, and what would have been Joe Paterno's final home game. Now, that creates a pressure cooker there. That creates a situation where time is of the essence, where ESPN once needs a resolution immediately, because how is Joe Paterno really going to be on the sidelines for this game when he's being accused of being a pedophile protector? And that's really what causes everything, because that pressure forces Penn State to panic. And in their panic, and I'm talking about full-on wet themselves, crap their pants panic, in the middle of a giant firestorm, the decisions that are made in those first couple of days have been completely and totally misinterpreted and have created a domino effect of events that have led to what I now believe is the greatest injustice in modern history, not involving a direct killing of anybody. Yeah. Although you could certainly argue that this whole thing ended Joe Paterno's life because he ended up dying 2 months after his firing of November 9th of 2011. Now, when I started on this is really important, my suspicions were purely that Paterno was getting railroaded. And I saw that there were a lot of reasons why this could happen. I mean, people forget he was 84 years old and, you know, obviously not, you know, didn't have control of all of his wits, wasn't exactly in a good position to fight back. And when someone is at the end of their career, they have no leverage, especially with someone like ESPN. ESPN doesn't need Joe Paterno anymore. He's of no use to them. And you know, there are not going to be any more national championships with Joe Paterno, regardless of what ended up happening with Sandusky at that age. And so I was thinking, wait a minute, there's just no way this story is correct. They're jumping to ridiculous conclusions on no evidence. This is all based upon a leaked grand jury report, and a grand jury report which not only shouldn't have been leaked, but is based upon nothing. I mean, in a grand jury, You can get a grand jury to say almost anything you want, believe almost anything you want, indict almost anything you want. I'm like, this is, and as I read more and more, I'm like, this is crazy. This doesn't make sense. But I'm presuming that the Jerry Sandusky part is got to be at least mostly accurate, right? I mean, maybe there's some embellishment, maybe there's some exaggeration, maybe people are, you know, losing their minds a little bit because, understandably, the subject matter is so sensitive. So I presumed, okay, Jerry Sandusky must be a pedophile. And long story short, I did a film called The Framing of Joe Paterno, which starred Franco Harris, among many other people, who I've gotten to know exceedingly well in this entire fiasco. And that film basically still acknowledges that Sandusky must be guilty of something, although it raises questions about the Mike McQuarrie episode. And then I interviewed Jerry Sandusky in prison, not once but twice, a year apart, both for 3 hours each. Also interviewed him on the phone a couple of times. Went on the Today Show not once but twice with Matt Lauer. The second time I went on with Jerry Sandusky's wife, Dottie Sandusky, to be interviewed with Matt Lauer from the Sandusky home. And slowly but surely, after investigating every single aspect of this case, very much against my own self-interest, I came to a conclusion I desperately did not want to come to, which is that Jerry Sandusky is innocent. And that's that's the only possible way to make this whole story make any sense at all. And the most remarkable part about it, guys, it's not even close. I know, I am well aware that to 98% of the population, what I'm saying sounds insane. I get that. It's part of why I didn't want to come to the conclusion. I spent at least a year trying to disprove myself because I didn't want to be the guy that went on the show and said Jerry Sandusky is innocent. As a matter of fact, Matt Lauer declared my career in the nicest way possible dead live on the Today Show because of my beliefs about this case. But it's not even close. I don't lose any sleep at all over wondering, okay, did I somehow screw this up? There's not a shred of doubt in my mind, and I'm the only person in this entire case who, one, has looked at things objectively, come to a conclusion against their own self-interest. Everybody who's looked at this has come to a conclusion that is 100% in their own self-interest, whether it's the lawyers in the case, whether it's the accusers in the case, whether it's the media, which has been the worst culprit, whoever else it is. I'm the only guy that came to one that's against my own self-interest, and I'm the only person that can answer any and all questions about what really happened and what my theory is, because nobody else can, because nobody else has a theory that can remotely work based upon what the facts of the case are.
Awesome. Well, so that's a really awesome background. We're glad to hear it. So, you know, we know it's not just kind of some random rabbit hole you went down and came to this conclusion, like, you know, a 9/11 conspiracy person or something like that. Like, you actually have.
Let me make it very clear. I despise conspiracy theorists. I despise conspiracy theories. The 9/11 truthers make me sick to my stomach. In fact, as a radio talk show host in Los Angeles, I had those loose change assholes on my in my studio, and I almost got in a fist fight with them. I mean, I cannot stand conspiracy people. I do not believe human beings are capable of large conspiracies. And oddly, I get called a conspiracy person in this case all the time. Erroneously, I'm the only person with a theory that's not a conspiracy. Everybody else believes in a massive, nonsensical, absurd conspiracy for which there is no evidence, and there should be OJ-like evidence at this point, but there's none. And so I want to make it very clear, as you can tell, I'm a little passionate about it. I am the non-conspiracy person here.
Awesome. Well, that's really that's good that we kind of cleared that up. And like I had said to Jay and Shelton earlier, you know, yeah, you obviously have a strong background and, you know, documentaries and broadcast and so on. So let's take it to kind of the like early on. Let's talk about some of the, you know, the first accuser and kind of that story, because that's kind of, I feel like that kind of breaks things open a little bit to the rest of the details.
Well, the first thing that most people say to me is, oh, well, how could 32 guys all be lying, right? Because that's the number of people that supposedly have gotten money from Penn State. That just doesn't seem plausible. Well, let's take a look at the first accuser. Aaron Fisher is his name. He's the only one of the trial accusers who has gone public. Only one to write a book, only one to do a major television interview. I urge, and here's the difference between me and everybody else. I urge everybody to take a look at the work of the people who disagree with me. In fact, I did a press conference outside of one of Jerry Sandusky's appeal hearings where I gave copies of Aaron Fisher's book away to the news media, begged them to read it. I beg anybody to read Aaron Fisher's book, because if you read the book with a shred of common sense and any semblance of knowledge of this case, you go, holy crap, there's no chance this is real. There's no chance that Jerry Sandusky sexually abused Aaron Fisher. Now, does that prove anything? No. By the way, the Philadelphia Eagles would be interested to know that in the Aaron Fisher book, they are implicated in this massive conspiracy by Aaron Fisher's therapist. He believes that the Philadelphia Eagles were part of the Jerry Sandusky conspiracy to cover this up because they contacted Aaron and offered him tickets after he came forward with his allegation and apparently wouldn't take no for an answer. And so my view is that somehow Aaron, because he was part of the Second Mile charity, came up on a list where the Eagles were trying to give away tickets. And I laugh at this notion that Aaron Fisher is telling them, no, I don't want tickets. And somehow his therapist is interpreting this as, oh, my God, everybody is trying to protect Jerry Sandusky. They're trying to buy Aaron Fisher off with Eagles tickets.
It's just a sales guy trying to hit his quota. That's all.
Exactly. Exactly. Thank you. And so this is the insanity. This is the insanity. See, once this story explodes and Jerry's side is not allowed to be heard because the media, you know, he's the most hated man in America and he's in prison and his lawyers did a horrible job. This is the story where people will believe anything now. There's no blowback. There's no fight back. Any allegation you want is automatically real, which is how we get to the settlements. But let me get to Aaron Fisher more specifically, because, okay, he wrote a book that doesn't make any sense. And if you know anything about it, it raises huge questions. But that doesn't prove anything. What people need to understand is Aaron Fisher is the only accuser in this case for 2 years. For 2 years. For 2 years, there's a grand jury, and all they have is Aaron Fisher. And he tries to testify not once, but twice to that grand jury. And he fails miserably. He can't even testify. He immediately starts breaking down, can't answer a question. That's why there was no indictment for 2 years. The third time in the grand jury, Aaron Fisher finally does testify. But guess what? He has to read his testimony. Read it. Almost certainly written by the same therapist who implicates the Philadelphia Eagles in the conspiracy, because his therapist is right there with him in the grand jury. So, again, now does this prove that he's lying? No, but it certainly ought to raise some questions. Also ought to raise some questions as to why there were no other accusers for 2 years with a full-scale investigation. So what I decided to do was, okay, let me try to figure out what's going on with this guy. And what I have done is I have spoken on the record, on tape, to 12 different people from different aspects of Aaron Fisher's life. I'm talking about kids who were his buddies during the time period which he was allegedly abused by Jerry Sandusky, at least three or four of those guys, the parents of one of these kids, two of his close aunts, people who sponsored a rally to support him back when his book came out, also girlfriends of his. So these are people from every walk of his life. All 12 people are sure he was never abused by Jerry Sandusky. 12. I have yet to have anyone contact me, because it's well known within his circle in Lock Haven, Pennsylvania. It's well known where I stand on this story, okay? This is not a mystery, because my stories about Aaron Fisher go basically viral within Lock Haven Pennsylvania, in Clinton County, and not one person has come forward to me and say, and I'm incredibly accessible. I mean, people contact me on Facebook all the time or email. I mean, I'm the most accessible person on the planet. And not one has said, you know what, stop it with Aaron. I know he was abused. Let me tell you why. I was there, I remember him telling this story this time, or I remember how he acted weird this time, it's totally consistent with what nobody, not one. So why are 12 people against their own self-interest telling me this against a guy who is a media darling, who is rich? And by the way, by the standards of Clinton County, he's super rich, right? So why in the world are 12 people close to him saying this to a complete stranger, me, when it's against their own self-interest? And by the way, it's not just based upon a feeling. Several of the 12 are sex abuse victims themselves. And that's why they know that Aaron doesn't show any of the signs. To me, the two most convincing are the neighbor who actually witnessed the first time Aaron ever told his mom, who I think is a key person in this whole story, her name is Dawn, the neighbor witnessed it all, witnessed exactly how it all went down, because they're living welfare housing and their houses are literally right next to each, I mean, on top of each other. They're basically living in the same house. He's in his video, you can see at our website, framingpaterno.com. And you can also, in the same story, you can see a very compelling interview with one of Aaron's best friends, who went to school with Aaron at the time period, the three years in which Aaron alleges that Jerry Sandusky sexually abused him 100 times. That's what Aaron says at trial. That's not how the story began. That's not how the story began, but that's how the story ends at trial, 100 times. This, one of his best buddies didn't even know Aaron was a Sandusky accuser until all of a sudden his book came out, and he's like, "What? What are you? This is you? This is you? There's no way!" And everything that his buddies say about who Aaron is completely contradictory to the narrative that they put in Aaron's book and in that interview I alluded to that Aaron did with ABC's 2020 with Chris Cuomo, where the narrative is Aaron is a poor young little boy who's naive and was taken advantage of by the great god of football, the retired assistant high school football coach named Jerry Sandusky, because that's what Aaron Fisher knew Jerry as. See, that's one of the many myths the media created. The media created this myth that Jerry Sandusky was this great, powerful figure because he coached Penn State 10 years earlier than when the allegations became public as an assistant football coach. Yeah, in 1986, Jerry Sandusky was a big flipping deal. To Aaron Fisher, he was an old guy who runs a charity, and it was an assistant volunteer at his high school. Okay, that's what Aaron Fisher knew Jerry Sandusky as. Not exactly intimidating, and not exactly so. It's a complete myth that has been created in order, because they got to see the other side has a massive problem. They need to explain why nobody in this case, and I mean nobody, ever told anybody about anything. And so we're supposed to believe that Aaron Fisher, who in reality, according to his friends, was having sex with girls constantly, at least according to his own stories, at the age of 12, we're supposed to believe that this same kid at the age of 12, 13, 14, almost 15 years old, as a wrestling star and a track star, who there's video of kicking the ass of the 35-year-old neighbor of his, that this kid goes to Jerry Sandusky's house 100 times, 100 times for oral sex, and never fights back, never gets drugs, never gets alcohol, never gets a payoff, never gets anything, but keeps going along with it for 100 times. Now, his mom never finds anything in the laundry that's weird, not once. It's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous story.
5'2". and like an old man.
Well, Jerry is a big guy, why is there no allegation? See, I defy anybody to find me a case anywhere. I guarantee you there's not one. I would pay money if someone could find me a case where there are teenage boys having sex with old men who are heterosexual. Aaron is very heterosexual. As a matter of fact, Aaron just got married this past weekend. So congratulations, Aaron. So he, of course, he has kids with other women. But Aaron is very heterosexual. In fact, all of his girlfriends say he's sex obsessed. So he is not homosexual. So find me a case where a teenage boy who is heterosexual has multiple sex acts with an old man with no alcohol, no drugs, no money, and no physical beating or anything remotely like that. No payoffs or anything close. I guarantee you there's never been a case like that. Never. Ever. At least not in modern times. I mean, you've got to remember, see, people pretend like these allegations may have happened like in the 50s and the 60s. I get in the 50s and the 60s, different era. In the 2000s, I've been a coach. I've been a football coach. I've coached basketball. I've coached football in the high school level and golf. These kids today, and Aaron is certainly one of those kids today, age-wise, he's in his early 20s. These kids today are instructed that if a coach raises his voice to you, you go and complain to somebody. I think they understand that putting a penis in your mouth is also inappropriate. And yet nothing. For 100 times without telling anybody, with no evidence. And by the way, they tried hard to get evidence. They tried to do a surveillance phone call with Aaron and Jerry Sandusky, and it got zip, nada, nothing. By the way, no pornography in this case. Jerry Sandusky, who doesn't know crap, doesn't know how to work his damn phone. There's no freaking way he could have ever erased some pornography in this era. For there not to be a shred of pornography on his phone, his email, his computer, anywhere else in the home, anywhere, is just preposterous. And by the way, there was pornography found in the case, as some of your Pennsylvania listeners will remember, except it was by the prosecutors and the investigators and some of the judges actually passing pornography, or what passes for pornography, in their own email. But nothing on Jerry. So, I mean, it's just the whole, every single thing about the case that you think you know is wrong. My love is strong as a dirt.
And welcome back, Comedy Food Sports Podcast, yeah. And new radio show on 1360 AM, South Jersey, Philadelphia, Delaware. I got to start saying Philadelphia first. again, check us out, comedyfoodsports.com, at CFS Pod on Twitter, Instagram. I think we're at Comedy Food Sports. We've done nothing on there, but we will. We promise. But also iTunes and Stitcher, if you want to kind of go back to our backlog of episodes. We've kind of saved some of our really cool ones, too. Like episode 5 was Adam Carolla, and we've kind of saved that forever. So we saved, like, Rich Eisen, even though it wasn't even our greatest episode. But, you know, it's just the ones that we're, like, really kind of fond of. But anyway, that was a very interesting thing to break out of. So we're all kind of a little bit blown away, a little bit in awe, a little bit like, I want to hear more. I want to dive deeper. So we really want to thank John for calling in. He's made a lot of enemies, obviously. And, you know, I think he's doing something that he truly believes in. And I talked to him on the phone off the air, and he's 100%, like beyond 100% confident. Like, he knows that he would go toe-to-toe with anybody and win in an argument on this one. So give him a chance. We're going to have another 20 minutes next week and probably another 20 minutes the week after, give or take. But if you want to listen to the whole thing, we're going to put it up on the website probably right when this one releases. So, you know, be sure to check it out and let us know what you think. And check us out at comedyfoodsports.com. Again, that's where you can find anything related to this episode, previous episodes, some random articles we put up, and any sort of content that we do. And it also has our Twitter feed and kind of a backlog of previous episodes you can play right from the site if you don't want to use the dreaded iTunes or Stitcher. So that's a wrap for this week. It was a lot of fun. We didn't have to put a lot of effort into it because Chip and John just stole the show for us. But expect some great guests coming up. We have some really cool people on the docket coming up. We're going to have two of my favorite guys, our first guest ever on the Comedy Food Sports Podcast, Jay Larson from the Everybody Drinks in America show. I forgot what it was called. that was on, I forgot what the show was even called. But anyway, he's a super funny stand-up comedian that America's Best Bars, that's what it was called. He was the co-host of that, and he is the co-host of the Crab Feast with Ryan Sickler, who, Sheldon, you'd be proud of. He only dates black women, so, and he's a white dude. He's got silk pillows and everything.
That's what you gotta have.
He knows. So anyway, they've both been guests in the podcast. They're hosts of the Crab Feast. They're doing a live Crab Feast in Philadelphia in a few weeks, and they're gonna be on. That show is really taken off, and Jay's obviously taken off hosting that show, Best Bars in America. So be sure to check that out. Again, comedyfoodsports.com. We really appreciate everybody listening. Everybody that's hearing us for the first time on 1360 AM and SB Nation Radio. We'll try better next time. But we really appreciate you guys listening in.
We didn't talk to each other all episode. That's the crazy thing. This is just not representative of what we do. We're not cursing. We're just like being polite. We're letting like guests speak. I don't understand. Yeah. It's not really
no locker room talk at all here.
I know.
All right. So we want to thank everybody again. Check us out, comedyfoodsports.com. That's the 100th time I put it in this episode. For Jay and Shelton, I am Patrick. We are Comedy Food Sports. We appreciate everybody listening in, and we will see you next Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. on 1360 AM, SB Nation Radio, and iTunes and Stitcher anytime. We thank you.
to another stereo.